But tell us a little bit, like, what does your typical work day look like?
Well, first of all, I don't have to wear pants, so that's good.
It's time for the Profitability Show. Inspiring conversations with successful business leaders, artists, and entrepreneurs that will get your blood pumping and your creative juices flowing. We'll focus on the latest and the greatest tools, techniques, strategies, and advice you can apply right now to achieve more success and improve your bottom line, no matter what business you're in. The Profitability Show, the business podcast that brings you less jargon and more margin. With your host, digital product strategist and innovator, Nick Knight.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. I'm Nick Knight and I am super excited to introduce my guest today, Jeff Keane, artist, humorist, and the man attached to the hand that draws the Family Circus cartoon. Jeff, or Jeffy, as you may know him in the comics, started as a contributor to the newspaper strip at the age of two when his father, legendary cartoonist Bill Keane, created the Family Circus and began observing and sharing Jeffy's exploits as well as those of his mom, siblings, and pets. Now, some 56 years later, Jeff gets inspiration from his own kids as he continues his father's legacy. He is now the sole artist and author of the Daily Comic, which is carried in over 1,400 newspapers and is the most widely syndicated panel in America. Let's find out what it's like to be a newspaper cartoonist in these modern digital times and discover Jeff Keane's very special profit abilities. Well, Jeff Keane, it's great to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to see you, Nick.
Yeah, you too. We've been friends for like over 15 years.
Really?
I'm
a lot older.
I watched your kids grow up. That's how I know. I always gauge it by when the last time I saw Spencer, and now he's like, you know, he's got like a beard or something, you know?
Yeah, Spencer's out of college.
Holy moly. Maybe it's been more than 15 years then. I don't know. It's just great to see you again. We've been able to kind of keep up with each other annually at Comic-Con.
That's right.
But we don't get to see each other too much, so it's great to have you here.
You show up whenever I'd be doing some drawing or something. I'd look up and then, oh, hey, I remember you.
That's right. That's right. So I wanted to invite you on the show today because, you know, part of the premise of this show is talking to people with jobs that are kind of unusual, unique, particularly interesting. And as we all know, Family Circus is a iconic strip. It's been 50 years now?
It actually started in 1960. So.
Wow. So that's fantastic. And
I wasn't good at math. That's why I ended up being good.
Well, you know, it's one of the great strips. And you know, it's fantastic that, you know, I know it was originally your father's strip, Bill Keane. I want to find out how that transition happened. I know you started working together for a long time, then you took over. I want to hear kind of your story about it. And then we want to talk about some of the business, like what goes into being a cartoonist these days. I know there's still newspapers out there. There's still comic strips. There's books, there's online stuff. I want to find out how that's all working out for you, but let's get started with, so tell us a little bit about, because I know the Family Circus is sort of based on your actual family. Tell me a little bit about that.
It's not only sort of based. It is.
It is based. You are Jeffy.
I am. Believe it or not, I looked like that in 1960. That shows you how long ago it was that now I look like this. And no, he started in 1960 when I was two. And I was the youngest of my, there's five of us, five kids. My mom and dad, he originally was in Philadelphia. Then we moved to Arizona in 1959. And then in 1960, he started the Family Circus cartoon. And it really was because he, as a cartoonist, the best thing to do is you're always doing what you know best. And as it turned out, he had done lots of cartoons for years. He worked in cartoons in the World War II. He worked for Stars and Stripes and Philadelphia Bulletin. And then he had married my mom. She was Australian. She came over and they got married. And then once he had kids, his cartoons tend to relate to what was going on around him at the time. And he was selling a lot of cartoons to magazines that were family cartoons. Mm-hmm. He decided to create his own feature, which was the family. It was actually called Family Circle for the first, I don't know, 8 months or whatever, and then a certain magazine objected to it, and so it became Family Circus. And he started out with just three, Billy, Dolly, and Jeffy were in the cartoon.
And so what I thought was interesting about it too was that, you know, the way he formatted the strip, I'm guessing that was a unique thing of putting it in the actual circle, right? That was kind of his thing, or was that done by others at the time?
I think maybe somebody else had done a cartoon in a circle every once in a while, but yeah, he always said, well, he picked up a compass instead of a ruler, and so that's what ended up in a circle. I was surprised. I think the format in the circle, it came from another cartoon that he was doing called Spot News that was done in, in a circle. And eventually, then when he did Family Circus, he did it as that single panel cartoon. And it was really I think it's unconscious, great decision.
Absolutely. It's such iconic branding. You know, it's amazing.
It stands out on a newspaper page. When you look, you always know where Family Circus is because it's sitting right there.
So. It's genius. It's easy to scan the page, and at a scan, they're all the same format, and bam, there's the Family Circus in that circle.
Right. It gives the impression of looking in also. I mean, I know that wasn't really a concept, I don't think, in his mind, but, you know, it does. It sort of is. You're looking in on a family, a little bit more realistic family life. Although when he started the cartoon, it was more gags. I mean, it was funnier than it is now. And he realized, you know, several years in that he had sort of a unique thing because he was able to recognize that the love of a family really meant something. And it really came through my mom, who was always his editor and would see the cartoons. And I think when he had certain cartoons that would touch people's hearts, they would write and he'd realize, oh, I've got something here. He doesn't have to do, a gag a day in that sense. It really could mean something more because there was a lot of cartoons that are gags, but there weren't a lot of cartoons that sometimes you could really think about and, you know, it might make you feel a little bit nostalgic or tug at the heart and, you know, lump in the throat type of thing.
Well, he really found those truths that everybody can look at in their own family and kind of resonate with everybody. You know, if you've got kids, if you are a kid, you relate to the parent. I mean, it's just...
Right, and so he had the ability to recognize that stuff. But, you know, I mean, when we were running around, you know, throwing stuff around and doing all that stuff and making a mess and causing havoc, he had the ability to see that and realize, well, maybe there is some humor in there. Of course, it'd have to be like a week later, 2 weeks later. But and I'm sure my mom would go, oh, you know, that's really not that funny. But he was a great observer of life.
Yeah. You know, I took a look at when last time we got together at maybe a year or so ago, I was looking at your volume, the collected works or whatever of Family Circus.
Right.
And what was really great about like flipping through those pages is because of the length that this cartoon's been around and it stayed true to like the characters didn't grow up, you know, they got a different kind of refined look or something over the years, but essentially they all look the same as they started. Yeah, but you can follow history, you know, for these past 60 years, you know, the cars changed.
I can follow my life. You know, when I can look at cartoons and go, oh yeah, this is when I graduated high school or this, because my dad would throw in, you know, something and sort of like a little high to whatever. And it wasn't just me. It was all my brothers and my sister, you know, events that would happen in our life. You then, something would show up in the cartoon that, was sort of a little recognition of it.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And you know, it's something that I think about when I'm doing the cartoon now. You know, I follow the calendar and try and look at it as, well, this is, you know, following along and whatever was happening in the world now, I might try and work that in.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, as he did back then, you know, in the 60s, 70s, you look at a 70s cartoon and it talks about, you know, gas shortages or, you know, Nixon or whatever it is, but there's always a family look at that. And then you know, as you go to the 80s, it's, you know, you have all these variety of things, and you see the typewriter change from, you know, a typewriter to a big computer to a, you know, a small computer to phones, you know.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Exactly. I was just flipping through the book, like a chunk at a time, and you just see these dramatic changes of just the background. And it was just really fantastic. So now, okay. So at what point did you actually start drawing? Like, when did the art bug hit you? And I know, I'll just touch on real quick. The art obviously runs through your family. Your brother's a well-known animator and director. Your father, obviously, a cartoonist. You're a cartoonist. Anybody else in your family with?
My niece also has done several books. I've got a nephew who's now an animator, a computer animator. He worked on the Peanuts movie.
Oh, nice.
And because basically, I didn't set out to draw. You know, I did theater in college. And you see where that got me, you know. And so that gradually, I started to work with my dad in the early '80s. Right when after I graduated college, I was living in LA, and sort of gave me a free schedule to do auditions and things like that. So I started to work with him, but just basically, you know, answering mail or doing some ancillary products, you know, some drawings for things. And my drawings were not very good. It was more of a pencil type of things. But over time, I developed more and more where, as with all things, you know, you practice and practice, and eventually you can do it. And then, so I started doing the penciling. And then that was like in the late 80s, I was doing more penciling. And then my dad had an inker for years who was just a brilliant, you know, the whole look of the family circus was a guy named Bud Warner who worked with my dad. And so Bud was getting older. My dad was getting older. And he said, so Jeff, you know, maybe you want to try and ink the cartoon. I was like, I can barely draw. And Bud used a brush to ink. You know, a lot of, nowadays, a lot of drawings done on computer, whatever, but with a brush. And because I didn't really know how to ink anyway, I said, well, all right, I'll try. And so then I taught myself to ink with a brush. And I would copy, you know, as closely as I could. And now, you know, and over time, it developed where I could imitate what my dad had done originally, and then Bud was done, and then now I was doing.
So was it already the intention at this point that you would someday take over the strip, or was it just, you're just helping out?
Well, it was, yeah. I mean, I assumed that, yes, I would take over the strip. This was, you know, in the mid 90s, late 90s. And you know, my dad was still doing everything. I mean, he was doing all the gags, he would do a pencil drawing and give it to me, and then I would ink it and finish the drawing and send it back to him. And then it was much more collaboration. And then as the 2000s moved on, he did less and less. My mom actually became, had Alzheimer's, and therefore, it was much more stress on him. Mm-hmm. And he did less and less of it. And then she passed away in 2008, which, in some ways, in keeping with the family circus, you know, I think his heart was so with her.
Yes.
He was doing less and less, but he would oversee everything. You know, I'd call him and he'd, you know, make a suggestion or whatever. And, but the great thing about him was he would also look at the cartoons that I did. He'd see a cartoon and he'd cut out a paper and write on there, "This is a great gag, Jeff." And then he'd mail it to me, you know, when I get it in the mail. It was basically like, he didn't have an ego about, well, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, yeah.
In the end, I always say, well, you know, Dad, basically that's a gag that you did before, and all I did was change. Yeah. Oh, well, that's why I liked it, I guess.
Yeah, 30 years later, nobody's keeping track.
That's right. Nobody does, but it's, you know, that's an admirable quality that he, what mattered to him was the quality of the feature, that it maintained what it was. And so I knew that I would take it over in some fashion, whether how it was taken over, you know, I didn't really expect necessarily to be doing it all myself, which is what I do now. But that, I think that has more to do with my just inability to just kind of, hey, I think someone else can be as good as me.
So now there was a transitional period where, I don't know if that, actually, I don't know if this ever went away, but I do remember that it was signed Bill and Jeff Keane.
Right.
I don't know if it's just Jeff Keane now or not.
It was actually in 2000, I had been working with him. And then in 2000, he said, you know, Jeff, I should put your name on here. And he said, I'll sign it Bill and Jeff Keane. And I said, no, Dad, don't sign it Bill and Jeff Keane, sign it Jeff and Bill Keane, because Bill Keane is what people want to see the signature on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're the main creator. I understand Jeff goes first, but it really was just Jeff and Bill Keane. Because
yeah, that's the brand.
The brand Bill Keane signature. And so he signed it that way all the way until he died. And then I had it that way for, I think, the rest of the year. He had died in November and the rest of the year. And then come that 2012, I changed it and made it to Bill and Jeff Keane. Because to me, it's always important that his name still stay on it.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking
when he first passed away, you know, there were suggestions that, you know, don't have his name on there. Don't have his name on, you know, whatever. I said, no, I can't not have his name on there because it didn't matter to me.
I'm sure he comes across like in every day when you're working on the strip.
Right.
He's a filter that you run the ideas through, the everything, right?
You know, everything that I do is only through everything that he's already done.
Yeah.
And whether I go back and look at gags that he's done and see how those can be used today, families situations haven't changed in the internal part that much. It's all the external things that change around you all the time. I mean, the ability, you know, that what we're doing right now.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yes, I do that 30 years ago, but that doesn't really affect the way I feel about my kids or somebody feels about their kids.
Yeah.
And that's the family circus really is more about family interaction than the things around them. So the things around them change, but their feelings for each other or how they feel about each other doesn't really change.
Yeah.
That's important to me.
Yeah. And I think you guys tap into those kind of truths of like kids are always kids. You know what I mean? Like you know what I mean? It doesn't matter because I can go back and read the ones from the 60s.
Right.
And still, you know, I got a 6-year old.
They're, I mean, a lot more smoking, a lot more drinking.
Well, there's that.
Because I consciously, you know, kids back then, you know, the car drawing, you know, the kids were all over the car. They were, you know, jumping around and doing all this stuff. Didn't have to, nowadays, if I do something with kids in cars, they have to be in seatbelts.
Yeah, that's right.
Got to have those things. Everything's got to be, you know, I wouldn't do necessarily a cartoon about drinking. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't have them smoking or anything like that. Well, for one thing, I don't think Jeffy really smoking too, but
he's got some tattoos in the new strip though, doesn't he?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, but luckily he's always shirt on. So you never see it. That was Stefan Pastis who did Pearls Before Swine. He had Jeffy growing up with tattoos and stuff.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Which I thought was funny.
Cool. Well, hey, we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to be back. And when I get back, I'd like to ask you to tell us a little bit about what a typical work day is like for a cartoonist. So that'll be interesting. We're just going to take a quick break and we'll be right back in a moment.
Are you looking to learn business strategies from some of the top experts in the world? Or are you looking to earn income as a leading expert yourself? At Revisit, we empower leaders, innovators, and experts to create online learning products that get better over time. Interactive learning products on Revisit remain live connected to the creators, who can add or update the content instantly, offer direct access and feedback, exclusive communities, and even special discounts and offers. Our unique app-based solution means the products you buy or create will remain exclusive and valuable in the hands of paying customers only. So, start learning or start earning at Revisit.com. That's R-E-V-I-Z-Z-I-T.com.
And now, back to the Profitability Show.
Okay, we're back with Jeff Keane from the Family Circus, and he's telling us a little bit about his history with his dad and creating the strip and keeping it going for over 60 years. It's unbelievable. Iconic strip.
Not yet. Not quite 60 years yet.
It's not quite 60. I thought it was 66.
It was born. No, it started in 1960.
Oh, 1960.
Yeah. Okay. So.
All right.
Come on.
I was giving you a few extra years.
Do I look 62? Of course, yeah, I do.
But you know what I think is really interesting to find out, because in our little video clip here, in our little conversation we're having, I can see your studio behind you, and it's always fascinating for me, like, what is that like? What to be a cartoonist? Like, you get up in the morning, how does that work? I know you have to do a lot of creative prep. So you're coming up with what the strip's about, the gags, the storylines, things like that. You're going to have to do the pencils and layouts and all that. You're going to have to do the inking. So there's a lot of jobs. I think people probably don't realize that there's steps and a lot of jobs, and it's a production queue just like any other production job. But tell us a little bit, like, what does your typical work day look like?
First of all, I don't have to wear pants. So that's good.
Which is convenient.
Yes, it is very convenient. No, I'll come downstairs because I work at home. Yeah. And so it's just, you know, actually I'll read the paper. I actually read two newspapers, which I know is a rarity nowadays, because, you know, I like to see the cartoons. I like to see what it looks like in the paper. So I read the cartoons, then I'll come in my studio and spend about an hour talking to some guy on the on the computer before I can actually do anything. My biggest problem is not to distract myself into other things.
Yeah.
Deadlines. I need to have deadlines. I am not a good work ahead person. My dad actually was really good at working ahead and eventually working ahead. And I just have a hard time doing it. I get easily distracted by, you know, shiny objects or something.
Right.
By the dog or whatever it is. But when I do, then I'll sit down and I'll try and come up with basically 12 gags, you know, every 2 weeks, because you need to have 12 gags and two Sundays. And I'll look at the calendar. I'll see, you know, it's about 6 weeks ahead usually. You know, what's coming up 6 weeks? What could I use? You know, if it's like right now with the cartoons that I was doing had to do with leading up to Memorial Day, right after Mother's Day. You know, I just finished Mother's Day cartoons, and that at least gets me in some sort of framework of, okay, well, if I put in one cartoon about that, then the other ones can be more generic.
Right.
Whatever they are. And I just sort of work my way through that. If I have to, draw a whole thing, then it's going to take a long time. If it's a single head or face or something like that, that's a lot easier to draw, which actually nowadays, because of the size of the comics, in 30 years ago, the circle in the newspaper was, you know, it was a fairly good size, and now it, you know, gets smaller and smaller.
Interesting.
And so I'm aware of you can't be as detailed as you used to be, which is actually a bonus for me, because then I have to do, you know, my dad would do drawings that had, you know, just all sorts of things all over it.
Right.
Like the dotted line cartoons.
That's right. For the listeners, I'll just touch in on that. So that what Jeff's talking about is very famous family circus type of cartoon where we're seeing where the kids or maybe Billy or Jeffy has been climbed up a tree and ran across the street and went all these different things. And there's a black dotted line that shows you the trail of all right. their activities. And that's kind of become something that other people have used. And it's just really famous.
It's one of the, my dad came up with several iconic images. The dotted line really is a family circus image, but you know, newspapers in those days, you know, it was always usually a Sunday page, so it was, you know, a half page or a quarter page of a Sunday page like that. And now, you know, it gets down to here, and if I do those, you almost can't see it.
Wow.
And so I'll rarely do it now. I don't, because it's just, I know it's not going to be seen. It's not worth the 3 days of doing a little dotted line going across and writing it out, because it just doesn't work. So I mean I'll use it, but I try and use it in a way that is appropriate for how it can be seen. But so I'll do that. So then I'll pencil and then I'll ink it, depending on how complicated the drawing is, and then I'll scan it. And I then put the caption, the dailies, you put a caption on the bottom, and actually the dailies, I do two versions. There's just a black and white version that gets sent to the syndicate, mm-hmm. who then colors it, because I don't really want to color the daily ones. I don't always particularly care for how it's colored, but, and so I've just not done that. It's just, that would just be another 8 hours it would take me to color them, but I will put, I'll put a screen on it, a dotted screen that as a black and white, I think it makes it stand out and it looks nice. So I do those two versions. The Sunday I'll scan it, and then I do color the Sunday pages. Actually the Sunday page looks, let's see what Sunday page I did. This is the Sunday page.
That's fantastic. I love the size of it. Okay, so I'm gonna put a picture on the website for those of you listening to the show. When you come to the website, check out this episode.
May 15th. So actually, we're ahead. So don't tell anybody what.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the podcast will come out after that, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, but that's really cool just to see the size of it. I mean, it's really.
Yeah, well, this is a lot bigger than most cartoonists work. My dad always worked at this size. And so that's what that's what I work at, because, and the dailies are 8.5 by 11s.
So this begs the question to me. So you create these drawings and then you scan them. That's what gets sent to the syndicate, I would guess. So what happens to all of those originals? Where do they live?
They live right over there.
Really? Wow. Yeah, so you've got them all.
Yeah. Actually, a lot of my dad's originals are going to be at Ohio State University, that has this incredible Billy Ireland Cartoon Museum.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that.
So that's where the majority of his originals and his papers are ending up, is at the Billy Ireland Museum. Yeah,
that's cool. So tell us so now we, in this work day that you just explained, is that like an full eight hour day for you, generally speaking?
You just jump in and jump out. Yes, actually, when I'm work all the way through, yes, it becomes an 8 hour day. It actually, a lot of times it's over an 8 hour day because I've put it off too long.
Right.
And then I'll go lie on the couch and think of, people call it a nap, but I say it, it's trying to think of gags.
That's right. It's creative time.
That's right. Yeah.
Just happens to be in a hammock with a Mai Tai closed.
That sound coming out of my mouth. I know it sounds like snoring, but that's really thinking. Those are ideas.
I know that well. My wife doesn't buy into it, but I know that well.
That's right. But it is. So there's a big plus and a big minus to working at home. Mm-hmm. The big plus is I can always work at home. You know, I can work at any time, and that's also the big minus.
Yeah.
That what I miss sometimes is the ability to leave it, because you know, a normal job, you usually go to the office or would go wherever it is, and you, except for the housewife, who unfortunately also has to just be home all the time and
right
back and forth. But you know, you go and you get, and your release is okay. Well, now I didn't finish today, but then you come home and then you're in a different world, and you just, you know, you don't have to worry about that as much anymore. More so 30 years ago than now.
Yeah.
Because of the ability to, you know, you got your phone and you've got your thing that you keep getting emails and texts and things. And I think that's not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
You need to have some time that you can just be away from your work. And anybody who's just on it all the time, it can really drive you crazy. And so the fact that I'm home all the time, I can go in the other room, watch TV, but in my mind, I'm constantly thinking, oh, you know, I should be in my studio right now.
That's very interesting, because I have the same thing too. It's like I work from home quite a bit as well. And yeah, it's that you can't disconnect. You know, it was interesting. I had a job before where I went into an office and I worked. And then when I was done, there was something about walking out of the office, get in your car and go home that sort of says, okay, I'm done. There's no more I can do about this today. And right. You can really enjoy that off time.
Yeah.
I think that is a healthy thing. I think a lot of entrepreneurs suffer.
I have a hard time just ever having off time or shutting my mind off time. Mm-hmm. Really, the best way for me to go off time is to leave the country, leave the state, you know, and actually go someplace where then I can't really do anything, you know. And if I want to take a vacation, I need to work so far ahead. My dad had a great, you know, basically it's always, you know, one cartoon a day is what you have to do. So if you work a week, and we barely would send it as 2 weeks, so 12 cartoons, but he would each week try and do 7 dailies and a Sunday page, so that at the end of 7 weeks, you actually have an extra week. You know, so every month and a half, you picked up another week. And so eventually he was working 6 months ahead, which is a much more relaxing way to work than 6 weeks ahead.
Yeah.
And so it's every time you finish something, I always think, oh, I'm finished. Oh, now what am I going to, you know, now I have to do this. You know, there's never, oh, I'm done.
I'm just done. Yeah. There's no finish line to cross. Yeah. Okay. So I have no idea how it works. Tell us about how your like revenue streams work. So as a cartoonist, I know, so you have a thing called the syndicate, which is sort of like a publisher for an author.
Distributor.
Distributor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, if in the newspaper industry, they would, you know, you'd sign with a syndicate that then would distribute. Their salesmen go around the country and sell the cartoon to the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get a percentage of it each time. And they negotiate all the finances with the newspapers, or how much is being paid. Each newspaper is paying, you know, newspapers will pay different amounts depending on the size of the newspaper, you know, how many people, how many readers it is, what cities it's in, and all that stuff. And so that's really the main stream of money for me is through newspaper syndication.
Now, do you have any way to influence that at all? Like, so you're not having to go out and do the sales, but how can you, is there something that you can do on your end to say, look, I want to like get this out to more readers, or I want to,
I never had to deal with that because, by the time I was working with, you know, Family Circus was in 1500 newspapers.
Right.
And now it's still in 1400 newspapers, which is great. So, you know, I'm grateful for any of the newspapers, any extra, like when my dad was doing, then it was really the ancillary products
mm-hmm.
that would drive more income. Like if you got some big ancillary, you know, Garfield or Peanuts, their you know TV specials or
licensing and
you know, MetLife Blimp or whatever that brings in a lot more revenue that and those can be influenced a lot more by the creator than necessarily the newspaper because the newspaper is publishing you can visually see that. If when I was in the 80s, my dad and I would go to some place that wanted to do a family circus product of some sign, you know, a t-shirt or whatever it is. And we would go and meet them personally. And my experience was when my dad did, it wasn't as much me, I was sort of just tagging along, but when my dad did that, it was much more successful. Once they met him, his ability to on the spot create, as he'd be sitting around and they'd talk. And to be honest, my dad had an incredible ability to, remember people's names. You know, he'd go around, you know, they'd meet and then, you know, and after it's over, you know, or during a meeting, he'd call them by name. And I know that several times people came up, yeah, how did your dad remember my name? And I said, well, because you met him and he remembers your name. You know, that's, and that is a big influence because people realize, oh, he does, you know, I'm not just some faceless person out there.
Yeah.
They come up with an idea or they'd say, do you think you could do this? And on the spot, he would go, sure, you know, what I could do is have, you know, the family run and do it. And they'd go, oh,
yeah, they get to see a little of the creative process.
Right, and they can see, oh, it can be used this way, it can be used that way. But it's that type of personal relationship that really helped the product, and then it would help it continue.
Yeah.
You know, like the first, after you'd sign a two-year deal, and then he'd meet him again, and this personal interaction really kept it going. And we found that if whatever the product was and they didn't really want to have a personal interaction, it would kind of die.
Interesting.
Nowadays, it's more a lot of personal internet online things that really can drive products and that type of thing. Books was all, you know, it was all published by a few companies really did the cartoon books. Andrews McMeel and Fawcett, and they would do these cartoon books. They don't do them as much now because of online. There aren't as many cartoon books being produced, except by certain cartoonists have their books done, and I don't know how big the sales are. But that's one way. And then, you know, you can sell them yourself online now on your website. You can go on and, you know, you can have your own products. I know several online cartoonists who that's really their revenue stream. They don't make anything by doing the cartoon. They make all their money through products that they might sell or whatever. Yeah.
Now, do you find that, so speaking of the digital kind of economy that we've got now, obviously newspapers have suffered a few slings and arrows, but you said, you know, you guys have maintained a pretty good distribution. So how has the digital economy, has it affected you negatively or positively, or what's your...
Well, it certainly affected others more negatively than me. You know, I think I was personally lucky, and our cartoon was personally lucky because it's kind of created its own little niche in the world, so it's iconic. It belongs on the newspaper page.
It's a cornerstone of Americana, really.
So I've had it easier in that sense than somebody who's just trying to get into the newspaper. Now it's really online comics are the ones that are being creative, but I don't know that they're being seen by the wide audience that newspapers always had. that's the one thing that I don't like as much about the online news and things like that, because now, because I would then I need to then seek out other ideas.
That's right.
Just what I'm interested in. When I read the newspaper, I'll read things, but then I'll see something that I would never have sought out at all. But
so you're being introduced to information that
that I just I wouldn't have sought out, and I learn a lot more that way. Also, I broaden my perspective and I broaden the understanding of what other people are seeing by doing that, as opposed to just watching what I really like.
Yes.
Just like the newspaper comics page, I do like to see a variety of different cartoons. I find that my reading of the newspaper comics page has changed over time. When I was in my 20s, I would read these certain cartoons, and then all of a sudden I get in my 30s and all of a sudden this appealed to me and that one would drop off and this. And, that's why I understand when, there's a lot of 20-year-olds or teenage, guys and who just hate Family Circus. And I get that. It's not.
That's that one my dad liked.
Or it's whatever. It's just like, okay, that's fine. But maybe 10 years from now, you'll get married and you'll have kids or whatever. Yep. All of a sudden you might find it means something everything is not for everybody.
That's right. Well, that's one of the things that I think we lost. Like you said, so when the newspapers, when you got a newspaper and you it was edited and it was put together by a group of experts, that are giving you what's newsworthy, but also even right down to the comic page, it was kind of aggregated together in one place, and you could kind of, that's how I got introduced to Calvin and Hobbes and Get Fuzzy. And, it's like, I wouldn't have known those.
Yeah, or Doonesbury, where it's like,
exactly.
It's like politically Doonesbury was over here and some people didn't care for it, but it was important to have that in the paper.
Yeah.
Because it's it's eclectic mix of ideas, and you don't have to have this. You don't have to have that. It's nice, but people like what they like, and their opinions matter too.
So let's swing back to, so we've talked a little bit about how your business is monetized and for our listeners, one of the things we like to talk about on the show is how, whatever business you're in, there's some fundamental truths. If you're in business, at some point you have to turn a profit. Otherwise it's a hobby. It's not a business. So we like to say, what we're trying to identify is, whether you're a ventriloquist or whether you're a rock and roll singer or whether you're a cartoonist, it doesn't matter. You're in business and you have to have something that you can depend on that says, if I do more of this, right, it means more profit. Now, I loosen profit. I generally like to speak in profit in a business sense of like actual revenue. I do more of this, I get more money in the bank. But sometimes people profit by saying, hey, if I do more of this, I get more free time with my family. That's my profit. That's what I'm, it can be whatever you frame it as. But for you, in your experience, and we talked about how your workday is and how it's easy to get distracted, you're working from home stuff. But what is that profitability that you have? The thing that you say, if Jeff Keane decides I'm going to do this, that will turn into some sort of a benefit profit for you or your family.
Well, I think my profit, I'm in a different situation only because I'm continuing something that was created. And my profitability when I'm working is if I do a cartoon and I think, oh yeah, this is, yeah, Dad would have liked this. And that's basically all, that's the way I do the cartoon. If I'm drawing Mommy, well, I'm thinking of my mom, or, Dolly, I'll think of my sister.
Yeah.
But is this true? Is this true to life? Does this sound like what they would say? And when I've achieved that, I feel profited by it, in the sense that you're talking about. If you're not talking about monetary wise, mm-hmm.
But that's an important one, because especially today, one of the things that you'll hear a lot of people talking about, particularly in marketing, is authenticity. So what you're talking about is really being authentic to the voice of the strip, to the characters in the strip, and people pick up on it.
Yeah, that's what's important to me is, well, as long as I feel like this is something that is maintaining what this special creation that my dad came up with was, you know, they don't happen often, but he did create something special in to me, and I think to a lot of people. And so my main goal is to continue doing, maintaining that quality as long as I can. And, you know, I don't, there's no way that I would be able to continue it for, basically he did it for 50 years. Now, if I could do it for 10, that would be great. But, and then the monetary thing, it doesn't matter as much to me now as it did to my dad, because he created something. Now my idea is I'm trying to at least maintain where it was and the quality, and giving where I can to, you know, we do calendars or books. You know, I would love to have books out. I'd love to have those things, but I understand how it, you know, I'm not necessarily seeking that out. I like to now actually try and give a little bit more to, if it's a charity thing or something like that, I'm more than happy to do that stuff. You know, with the National Cartoonist Society, I'd go to Afghanistan and Iraq and visit the troops, because of USO, because my dad did it in Vietnam and the National Cartoonist Society did it in World War II. And that's important to me. And right now we're trying to do a children's hospitals, visiting those. St. Jude in Memphis, we're doing some things there. Those now are really profitable to me. Mm. That's where I get a great profit from. When I would do the USO and visiting the troops, you know, they'd always say, "Oh, what a, you know, it's so great for us that you're here." And I'd say, "No, you know, it's really great for me." I get all the cartoonists who I would do it with would get way more out of it than they did, because it was all about talking to them and seeing them, and it was inspirational. And with my particular feature, it's different than what most people would, because I was lucky enough to be kind of given this gift of, you know, a family that was just really important.
Yeah.
And so it's important for me to try and maintain that.
Well, I can't think of two better profitabilities. And first of all, authenticity, something that everybody should be able to relate to. It helps anybody in any kind of business to be authentic to who they are or to what they've created. I think that's fantastic. And the other one, of course, you know, give back. You know, I think there was a great quote by Kevin Spacey, the actor, and I don't think I'll get this exactly right, but basically the idea of the quote was, once you've achieved some level of success in life, be sure to send the elevator back down.
Yeah. Yes.
And I think that's so great, right? You know, don't make somebody else take the stairs, you know, send the elevator back down. You know, it's like, do something for somebody else.
Yeah, and it is one of those things that, you know, I've just been blessed as far as everything that I'm doing. And so, you know, whatever comes of it, that's, you know, the gravy. I'm really happy that my dad's it's really my dad and mom's creation has maintained all this time. And people, and I, you know, when I talk to somebody, I say, "Oh, you know, what do you do? I do the family circus." And they get a, you know, a sort of look, "Oh, I know that."
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that's a really, you know, I get this glory from actually not having done it. Well, I get it. Well, I guess when I was 2 years old, I came up with all the great gags.
That's right.
So, yeah. So,
you've been contributing for a long time.
No, but that's what's really nice about it for me.
That's fantastic. So tell us now where we can find the Family Circus these days. Is there a place online to, if we haven't been caught up, if it's not in our newspaper, is there somewhere we can go see some more of it?
Well, you can always go, www.familycircus.com. That's the regular Family Circus website. And then King Features, there's a comicskingdom.com, I think, that would, I think they sell, I think they'll send, you can subscribe and they'll send you the cartoon in by email. If you just go to familycircus.com, it's all there, but that's where I guess nowadays the main cartoon can be seen. But you know, there's always the newspaper.
But you know, for us who don't,
be different. Go and read the newspaper. There's actually a whole bunch of other articles in there too, besides just the comics page.
Now, if we go to familycircus.com, is that also the place we can find that beautifully produced volume of?
I think that's just on. Although I guess it is listed in there. There was two volumes that IDW did. They did Family Circus Volume 1, which was 60 to 62 or something. Uh-huh. The second one was 63, 64, something like that. And they've still not come out with Volume 3. So okay. I don't know if they ever will. It would be nice if they did.
Anybody's listening, send a nice email. Be nice. Send an email to IDW.
No, because I get emails all the time saying, "Hey, we won it," and that's like, it's not up to me. but you know, or just go on eBay. There's 8 million Family Circus books you could just buy off eBay.
Fantastic. Hey,
another thing, you know, there's a statue of my dad that we created. After he passed away, the town that we grew up with, the town of Paradise Valley, was gracious enough to say, "Hey, we'd love to have a statue." I was like, "Oh my gosh, you're kidding!" You know, and they said, "No." And so we came up with an idea. Actually, my brother Glenn and I kind of came up with a concept and developed this statue. And it's a 9-foot by 7-foot statue. It's in Scottsdale at the McCormick Stillman Railroad Park. And it's just a beautiful statue, a great representation of what the Family Circus, I don't have it in here. It's in the other room, but the representation. And that's one of the things I'm really proud of
So tell us again, where's that at?
It's in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's at the McCormick Stillman Railroad Park, a wonderful place for families. It's one of the few places you go where it just has a train that you ride around and has an ice cream place and model trains and it's just a place where there's not a lot of technology, not a lot of this. And my dad's statue's there with has him. It's called Giddy Up Daddy. He's on all fours and the kids are on his back. Characters. And it just turned out really beautiful. So if you're ever in Scottsdale, you should go and visit that. It's one of the, you know, there aren't a lot of cartoonists who have statues of them. I think Charles Schulz does and my dad does. And so it was just a blessing to our family that the town thought enough of him that they wanted to do this.
That is fantastic. Wow, what a great legacy for him. So yeah. I'll try to find a link to put on the page for this podcast episode you guys can go and take a look at that or find out how to visit and I'll get the exact spelling from you, McCormick.
Stillman Railroad Park.
McCormick, yeah. Stillman. All right, we'll get that down. Jeff, it's been so great to have you on the show, and I appreciate you spending so much time with us today. And I'm, you know, big fan and friend, as always.
You have good taste.
I do. I have very good taste. Thanks so much, and look forward to seeing some more from the Family Circus.
Okay, take care, Nick. Thanks.
All right, cheers.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to learn more profitabilities, go to profitabilityshow.com for episodes, show notes, and more. And be sure to click the subscribe button to get the latest episodes delivered straight to your favorite device.